Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, we're taking our full 2 hours to tell the story of the shift. We're looking at how communities thrive and how communities struggle, often because economies change and people move on. It's not just one or two stories, and we're not just offering you 1 or 2 hours of radio. We'll feature the shift here on In the Moment, on SDPB-TV, and online at sdpb.org/shift. We traveled the state to bring you these stories. Some are hopeful, others bittersweet. All of them are South Dakota. We begin with education. SDPB's Keely Boltina is standing by in Centerville to get the conversation started. Keely.
Thank you. We are in the Centerville School. We are in a room off of the library. We are warned there will be children in the library next door. They may make noise. I assume that is what a school is about. Superintendent Tim Hagedorn is with me. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I just talked about some of the students that might be coming into the library connected to this room, and I want you to explain a little bit about Centerville. It's a building that houses all K through 12 students for the district.
Yeah, we have a little older part of the building, but everybody K through 12 or pre-K. We actually have a preschool also in the school, and it's all in one building here.
And what does that offer then as far as connections among different grades? Is that possible? Do you have to combine any classrooms? Tell me about that.
We don't combine any of the classrooms. We have plenty of room for each of the classes, and actually our classes in the elementary are growing. We're averaging about 21 per class below eighth grade, there's a lot of benefits to it, even with high school kids coming down and doing reading time with elementary and teacher's aides, so they work with some of the lower elementary kids.
And I assume that's one of what you would consider a benefit to being in a district that is what did we talk about, 225-ish students?
Well, yeah, we're about 225 is what state aid had for us. We're at about 232, so we've went up a little bit on that. So,
and that's the entire district. We're not talking about a high school class. I mean, that's the district.
That's the district, yes.
When you you are superintendent here in Centerville, but this is not your first gig. You spent more than 30 years in education, really in a lot of small schools. What are the misconceptions about small schools that people have?
I've been in a large school, and I've sure. been in smaller schools. I grew up, I was talking to you earlier, kind of like a military brat. I was an education brat, and my father was a administrator in this state for a lot of years. Grew up in a small town, and when the opportunity came to come back to South Dakota, I went to Alaska for 13 years and was at a large school, and decided to bring my kids back to a smaller lifestyle, which I love South Dakota's rural area.
But what about this concept that we hear where it is, you know, if you, it's kind of like buying in bulk, right? If you have more kids, then you're able to offer more classes, more options, more opportunities. So a lot of these small districts should do that for kids so that they can better serve their students. Why not? Why is Centerville unique in that concept of consolidation, both in attitude, but also in region?
You know, these larger towns may be able to offer more opportunities, but I think it's very unique in these smaller towns that you get more individual help with these students. You know, it's so competitive anymore. Everything is test-based and how you rank and do well academically. And I think you can get more of that if you look at the rankings overall. You know, in the state, it's a lot of smaller schools that can supply that more individual help for these students.
What are the drawbacks then? If the advantage is this kind of more individualized learning, what do you miss out on?
Well, sometimes, and it depends the location of these towns in South Dakota, if you are in a smaller town and you're very rural, you're not going to have the opportunities of participate in different things and be able to do things. And that's what you hear from kids a lot of times is, There's nothing to do, you know, there's nothing to do in these towns. So a lot of communities have gotten into their economic development and expanded upon their programs and getting stuff for these youth to do.
So they rely a lot then, I mean, on school programs too. If there's nothing else to do in town, does the responsibility fall to the school?
Well, I think a lot of times you got creative people that are working in those levels that have the best interest in these towns and want and know that they want to create these programs, you know, for a kid and give them opportunity to be able to participate in those. And, you know, if what you see, if you don't offer the programs or the programs go to the wayside, they may open enroll to other schools. And that's the problem that these small towns have.
Welcome back to In the Moment. We're talking today about how shifting population continues to impact South Dakota communities. Sioux Falls is one of the fastest growing cities in the Midwest. Population is projected to reach nearly a quarter million in the next few decades. Take a drive not too far outside of the city, however, and you find a different story. SDPB's Gary Ellenbolt takes a look at how some towns are able to thrive in the 21st century while others barely hang on.
There's an interesting and maybe somewhat sad bit of trivia concerning Dennis Denai, Samantha Jacobson, Jill Johnson, and Haley Jorgensen. Those four young people got together in the spring of 2012 and received the final four diplomas awarded from Hurley High School. The Hurley School District consolidated with nearby Viberg for all classes and activities the next year. Viberg has the elementary and high schools, while Hurley's fairly modern school building hosts a couple of grades of middle school. Tracy Hummel is the city clerk in Hurley, which is now home to just over 400 people. She says the town dynamic has changed since she began working for the city 23 years ago.
Friday nights, when I first moved here, Friday night in the bar after the game, I mean, people would stake out a table so that after the game they had a place to sit. And the kids would come in for the cheese balls after the game and go off and do what they do. But you don't even see that anymore. Which is not so much about the drinking part of it, but just the camaraderie of having been to the game, talking about the game, the parents getting together on Friday nights, and so you just don't see that as much.
Hurley has never been mistaken for Sioux Falls. Its largest population count was 586 in the 30s and 40s. Marilyn Jorgensen moved to Hurley from her hometown of Sioux City, Iowa in 1951. 5 years later, she was hired as the town librarian. She still has that position. Jorgensen sits and visits in City Hall, her husband Waldo by her side in his cap and casual clothing, looking every bit like the retired farmer he is. Marilyn Jorgensen says the town and the school started losing steam when farming changed in the area.
It used to be, oh, at least three, four, sometimes five little farms on a section, and now there's sections with nobody.
At one time in Hurley, several gas stations and grocery stores were able to thrive. Those merchants would extend their hours on Wednesday and Saturday nights to cater to farmers. Hurley now has a convenience store on Highway 19, a bar in town, post office, and a couple of other businesses that hold more regular hours. Marilyn Jorgensen says she has also noticed the changing demographics at the library.
We don't really have a summer reading program that now, because most of the parents have a babysitter and they work in Sioux Falls. And the babysitter can't let them go without taking them. Well, if they've got a baby at home, they got to drag the baby up and take them back. And it just kind of messed up because we used to have like 15 or 20 at summer reading program. But now they're at babysitters.
Hurley's population fell to a low of 372 in the 1990 census. But City Clerk Tracy Hummel says the town is seeing a small comeback.
Especially in the last year or two, a lot of adult children that grew up in Hurley getting married, buying houses. So you'll have three, four generations of families living in Hurley and continuing. So clearly there's reason and hope, and they want to raise their kids in a small town where you've got nice parks and a good school and everyone's happy.
City leaders hope the growth leads to job opportunities. That hasn't happened yet, but a community business owner, appraiser Doug Standage, says an employer would do well to check the town out.
The first thing that I would look at would be the reflection of the people that that not only live in Hurley, that would live in the smaller communities. You've got Parker 8 miles to the north. You got Vireg 7 miles to the south, and you've got smaller communities of Davis. I would say that the pool of employment that you could get from the people would be beneficial to a company. They know that we're an agricultural community, and to make that work, you have to be hardworking.
Granted, Parker has its advantages over all other towns in Turner County. Its location as the county seat gives a nearly guaranteed source of employment. The town also is known for one of the premier county fairs in the state. One school in Parker serves every grade. The district is supervised by third-year superintendent Donovan DeBoer.
I mean, we're 25-minute drive to Sioux Falls, and I think you can get both of, you know, the best of both worlds. You get to be in a small school, get the small school feel where the high school student can be in quiz bowl, math-thons, plays, chorus. You can do cross-country and football if you wanted to, just because we are that size where we need the numbers to do that.
One goal DeBoer had when he came to town was to change the school district culture. He says it wasn't bad, but it wasn't that great either. DeBoer became known through a couple of video announcements he made calling off school due to bad weather. One of those announcements included a high-ranking state official.
If you don't believe me, talk to the governor. Thank you very much. Governor Dugard, tell them what they need to know.
School is canceled in Parker.
School canceled in Parker, South Dakota. You heard it first here first.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster joins us now as we continue our look at how South Dakota communities change as populations flux and shift. You can read Kevin's blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin Wooster, welcome back to In the Moment.
It's so good to be back, Lori.
Oh, let's go dancing in Vivian. Tell me about this place that you're looking into for this blog.
Well, it occurred to me just recently that I might be the last member of my family to actually dance on the Vivian dance floor, because we were there, I think, in 2014 for a Lyman County Foundation fundraiser when Mogan's Heroes out of Sioux Falls were there and played with my brother Jim, got on stage and dragged some of the other family members up there. And then when we were down waiting for the band to finish and the crowd was watching them, I think my wife and I slipped off to the side and danced a little bit. So that was only 3 years ago, and I was just on it. That was the last time prior to when I was in there the other day. And it's a wonderful place to visit. They've got a dance history that goes back to the early 1920s there. Wow. And they actually built a dance hall as a fundraiser for the American Legion. I shouldn't say hall. They built a floor. And they just built a wood floor, and then people would come dance, and they'd raise money to form this American Legion. Eventually, it started to warp because of the weather, so they put a tent over it. And then eventually, by the late 20s, they built a building over it. And that old historic dance hall that lasted through the 30s and 40s until they built a new one, which is right next door to it as a city gymnasium and everything, combination building in 1952. And that's where I danced. And that's where the local historian and past musician and Vivian lover Lonis Wendt took me in the other day, which was literally a lot of fun.
So tell me about the town of Vivian and how it has sort of changed and shifted over the years.
Well, you know, I think in the blog I talk about how you can look at the dance hall as kind of symbolic in the town, and the town is kind of representative of so many of these smaller farm ranch towns across the state that have lost population. And you know, with Vivian, of course, it lost its school in the 70s, high school in 70, its grade school in 78, and, you know, once had two grocery stores, once had two garage gas stations, and lots of other businesses there, and three churches down to one now. And yet, it went from a population of about 175 in the 1920s to about 110 now. So it's not like it's gone away. But, you know, what is really sometimes it's hard to measure the loss of people in a town population, because where you really lost it was in all those small farms and ranches that disappeared for 30 or 40 or 50 miles around it on all sides, where you used to have so many more of those, and you used to have the larger families and a lot more of them, and now they're bigger farming and ranching operations, a lot more mechanization, and you know, there just isn't the rural population that used to come into these small communities and have such an impact.
Mm.
But it's still a place where it's kind of an ironic place, is because Lonis talks about how it's a little bit of a bedroom community for Pierre, 35 miles away, because okay. they've got some people that live there and some younger people with families and commute to the 35 miles on all four lane to Pierre. And I talked to one of the commuters and we talked to Myron Lee, one of the old historic rock and roll guys from Sioux Falls, who was very popular sure. in the 50s and 60s and still around down there.
Right.
Of course, he said, we went to Vivian and played there. And seems like there was always a fist fight outside, and seemed like there was a lot of good people around dancing. And so we did a little bit of that looking back, too. And it was just fun to walk through to open that building up and feel right. its atmosphere kind of rush out into the warm April sunshine and then talk about it with him was a gas.
So what's there now? It's still standing. Is it used for anything?
It is, and it's used for a dance once in a while, for a wedding, for a, you know, wedding event or an anniversary event for the foundation. You know, the Lyman County Foundation used it just a few years ago, packed it in. And in fact, I had invited former Senator Larry Pressler, who was running for the Senate that year again as an independent, to stop by. He was driving back from a campaign stop in Rapid City, and I to Sioux Falls, and I had urged him to stop, and so he did, and so he joined us in the old dance hall for this foundation thing. I think he got to see Mary and I dance a little bit, too. I'm sure that excited him.
What's the legacy of a, you know, a small square footage, you know, dance floor like that to a town like Vivian and to the people who grew up there?
Well, there's so much that they talk when you go there. They talk about how Blue Baron and his orchestra came through, and that was apparently a guy that was pretty popular back with the big old band era that was kind of fading in the 60s. But they caught them on a trip between the Eastern Coast and Seattle, and the producers and the promoters in those times locally were always in touch with that whole connective world of dance, of bands, and they were always trying to get somebody good, and they happened to get the Blue Baron and his band stop, and that was an old big band swing type sound, and there were about 1,800 people in there that night, according to Lonis, and he said that's the most they ever had, and they had to dance in shifts. People all cooperated and would go out onto the floor, and then the next group would stand there, and the others would get off so they could dance. And he said there are people that can still remember those sounds when they go into that building, and you know, the things with Myron Lee and local guys. DJ and the Cats is a very popular okay. regional group that came out of Presho, and you know, they've got a history there too.
Right, you've got a place to play.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely. A great opportunity for the musicians themselves to find those audiences as well over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, and they had a little, they were very smart in the late 40s and early 50s. They created a little bar across the street where you could go sit down, and he said not all of the other towns had that. And one of the things he said was that the 70s kind of started to bring an end to that whole dance era because the other towns were getting them. Vivian had kind of a monopoly on it for a while in that area. Mm-hmm. And the other towns picked it up. And then in the early 1970s, we got serious about cracking down on DWI, which was a good thing. overall, except, but there's a way in and a way out. There's two ways in and out of Vivian. So if you put a sheriff at one end and a highway patrol at the other, you're getting everybody as they leave. And guys that were driving in from Winter and Pierre and Chamberlain and Draper mm-hmm. and parts in between decided, boy, if I'm going to go to Vivian and I can't drink a few, I don't know if I'm going to go to Vivian. And wow. So there, that was the good and the bad of that.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The first Build Dakota Scholarship recipients are set to graduate from tech schools across the state. The Full Ride Scholarship funds approximately 300 students seeking a skilled trade degree from one of South Dakota's tech schools. SDPB's Lee Strumager takes a look at programs the state has set up to grow a skilled workforce in rural areas.
Sarah Garrow checks out a child mannequin hooked up to a heart monitor in an emergency room replica at Western Dakota Tech in Rapid City. Garrow is a 31-year-old nursing student. She says she discovered a love for nursing when she was younger after her grandmother got sick.
I just saw the amazing work that they all did with her, the time she spent with nurses in hospitals, things like that. And I just decided, like, wow, you know, what they do really makes a difference in somebody's life.
As a mother of two, Garrow says affording the cost of tech school was out of the question. That's where the Build Dakota Scholarship Program came in. It paid for
all my books, all of my fees, clinical fees, everything. They paid for everything. There isn't anything that I had to pay out of pocket.
Garrow is set to graduate in May. She's part of the first group of graduates to receive a scholarship from Build Dakota. Build Dakota was established in part by two donations of $25 million, half from Denny Sanford, a South Dakota businessman and philanthropist, and the other half from the South Dakota Future Fund. Several construction, engineering, and electric companies have partnered with the program to help pay for a portion of student scholarships. Denny Amundson is the Build Dakota program manager. She says these partnerships help ease the demand for skilled workers in rural communities.
Sometimes they have to compete with these larger cities to get people to either come home or relocate. And I think especially giving the opportunity for these industry partnerships, you know, not only can they grow their own talent by working with the technical institutes, but hopefully, you know, by cultivating that relationship and having that partnership, it'll bring them home back to their rural communities.
Amundson says industry partnerships stretch the scholarship's money even further. Build Dakota is one of only several funds and laws meant to develop and keep skilled workers in rural South Dakota. Last year, lawmakers increased the sales tax by half a penny to bump up teacher pay. Previously, South Dakota teachers were close to last in the nation for compensating teachers. This legislative session, lawmakers eased licensing requirements for certified nurse practitioners and nurse midwives. The new law removes the mandate that certified nurse practitioners have an agreement with doctors to get their licenses. Lawmakers also revised criteria for determining if a property is classified as ag land for property tax purposes to accommodate the shift in agriculture. In the Building South Dakota Fund, not to be confused with Build Dakota, lawmakers shifted funding in the program to assist in rural rental and rural home ownership. Other lawmakers, like Senator Jason Frerichs of Wilmot, hope the state can further encourage broadband access expansion.
I would hope we will see some changes happen here in South Dakota. We have invested heavily in broadband. Not so much we as a state, we've helped out and removed any roadblocks, but companies have invested in making sure that broadband high-speed internet access is throughout our entire state, and we just need to continue to do that. That will break down those barriers and help out our rural communities much more than anything else because it gives that incentive.
It was 19 that had dialysis.
Oh. Yep. Okay.
Back in Rapid City, Sarah Garrow prepares for her last day of clinicals at Regional Health Hospital.
This is Monday. He wouldn't have dialysis today. So
part of the catch for the Build Dakota Scholarship is working in South Dakota for 3 years. Garrow says that won't be a problem. She says she's always wanted to stay in South Dakota.
I was born and raised on the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation in Eagle Butte, and I just want to go home. I just want to be a nurse. I want to serve my community and my people.
Garrow says she hopes to work for the Indian Health Service Hospital in Eagle Butte. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strupinger in Rapid City.
Let's keep going now with the shift. Now we'll explore the nuances of healthcare delivery as people relocate and communities grow or shrink in size. SDPB's Keely Boltina joins us now live from Centerville. Keely.
Thanks, Lori. We are in Centerville, but we are talking with a certified nurse practitioner who has been working for the last 5 years in Vyberg, South Dakota, which is about 10 miles away from here. Kayla Nielsen, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Can we start by discussing this concept of what a certified nurse practitioner is so that we can get it out of the way?
So we know, because it's confusing.
Right.
Of what exactly do you do? Well, my day consists of a clinic in Vyberg, but also in Vyberg we have an emergency room, we have a hospital, so I help take care of all of that. So I see my patients through the day in the clinic taking care of pediatrics. I do well child visits. I see people back to manage their diabetes. I see ear infections, all the respiratory stuff, all the influenza we've had going on. So it's a big variety over there of what I do. We have a physician over there and another nurse practitioner, but then we also have another nurse practitioner here in Centerville at the clinic and a PA up in Parker, but mostly we're just taking care of the patients, whatever needs they have, all doing pretty similar things.
And that's, you mentioned those places as kind of the greater Pioneer Memorial family, because the hospital and health service in Vyberg is Pioneer Memorial, and then there's a clinic here in Centerville, and they're managed by Sanford Health. So you see the Sanford logos, but also the Pioneer Memorial, and it's kind of this cooperation.
Right.
And we also know that by that management, sometimes we can streamline some processes in smaller towns that maybe healthcare organizations couldn't do if they were these individual clinics as they used to be, things like electronic medical records. So why would something like that be important to the patients that you see in Vyberg if they have to go someplace like Sioux Falls?
You know, it's convenient for having the same computer network that if I have a patient that's maybe in the emergency room that we need to send up to Sioux Falls to Sanford, that any of their lab work they had done, the CAT scan results, notes from my visits are all in there. That makes it much more convenient for that transition of care.
And with that, I want to talk about this concept of being in communities, because we used to see that a lot of small towns in South Dakota had like the one doctor. I was talking with somebody earlier today here in Centerville, and she said, oh yeah, that was Doc Pascal. And I remember, you know, in Lenox, it was Dr. Scott Rogers. Like, that was the physician that was there, and that's who you went to see.
Right.
And now that's changed a little, but there's also this community presence at, you know, the small town level. Why is that critical?
You know, it's for the convenience of the patients. We do have a fairly large elderly population that we serve, but all ages too, you know, and the convenience of having everything you need close, either in the community of Vyberg or in the surrounding communities that were there for them. And yes, we used to have, it was Dr. Nelson, Dr. Mark. They
so
were
you know
our big,
too.
Yes, and they were, you know, and those were some big shoes to fill, because unfortunately, Dr. Mark passed away just shortly before I started over there. You know, but I took on a lot of his patients. And so I kind of feel like I got to take over being, you know, that small town provider for them. And, you know, people really appreciate that, that someone, you know, my plan is to stay there until they kick me out. And I think that's important for the patients that feel they can establish and that they have everything that they need and that there's going to be that continued care, that they're not going to have to switch every few years when someone comes and someone leaves. And I think that's just very important to our patients around here.
Kick me, I'll stay there until they kick me out or make me leave is a pretty high level of commitment there, Kayla Nielsen. You, let's talk about that then, because you are kind of, I guess we can call you a local, right?
Yes.
And you have a passion for that local medicine.
I do. I graduated high school from Wakanda, went all the way north to Vyberg to work
all the
up
way
there.
North.
All the way north.
Right.
It's about 12 miles, maybe. Okay. You know, actually, I'm Danish, so I felt like the Irish community of Wakanda, I love them dearly, but, you know, I'm with my Danish folks now in Vyberg. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always had a passion for rural medicine. That's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in a small town. I wanted to be, you know, my inspiration was Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. If I could jump on a horse and have my black doctor's bag and go make house calls, that would be ideal. But the patients come to me, and it's not too far away coming to Vyberg. So always been a passion of mine. I'm happy to be serving the community like this.
And you say always because that dates back to high school for you.
It does. Actually, my senior year, my research paper that I wrote was on the shortage of physician assistants in rural South Dakota. And so, I mean, even back then, we were recognizing the shortage that we have of providers in these small towns. And I'm happy to be able to fulfill and lessen some of that shortage, at least around in this area.